We're exploring the science of color creation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So a dozen years ago, a grad student was working on ore minerals in the lab and by accident discovered an intense blue pigment that eventually was the birth of the Crayola crayon called Blutiful. Andrew Smith is that material chemist and a color co-creator. He worked for 6 years with Shepherd Color Company to create pigments. What do you want to know about how color is formed? Join in at 800-642-1234. Andrew Smith, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me on your show today. I'm really excited about having this conversation.
Yes, excited about color. So give us a mini color lesson, if you will. Color is perceived as the reflection of light off an object. So what is the difference between colors and pigments?
Well, there's a lot of similarities to begin with. You know, as you mentioned, you know, color in its simplest definition is a function of light and how it interacts with an object and then how it's perceived. So you really need all three of those things in order to observe color. Pigments, of course, have color to them, or colorants for that matter. And each of those materials is a little bit different, either in its chemistry or its morphology. So that's the shape of particles. And the application of those pigments gives us these feelings and emotions and whatnot. So color is a function of chemistry, physics, and biology.
I understand that it's car colors that catch your eye. What pops out to you about the different cars on the road and when you see color in the world around you?
Yeah, so color can really elicit some interesting emotions. And it's the whole reason that companies have brands, right? They use colors and objects for their branding, because it can elicit emotions, and emotions, you know, basically cause us to make decisions. So when you see a car driving on the road and it has maybe some bright neon green tone to it, it's a new model out on the road, it can kind of generate these feelings of excitement and interest and, you know, a drive to maybe want to do something different in your own life. So it's a really fun way to kind of express your feelings and emotions.
I think I do the same double take when I look at nail polish. I could look at a wall of nail polish and just behold it for a long time. What is it that really attracts you to color and makes you just say, wow?
Well, color is everywhere. It's, you know, right now is a perfect time for color in autumn, where leaves are changing into these bright and vibrant reds and oranges. There's some browns and rust colors. And, you know, so it's around us and in our environment every day. As we mentioned, the emotions that it can create, you know, these feelings inside, as well as, you know, the actual function of those materials allow us to do a lot of different things and have different things that we might not otherwise have as colored objects. So, you know, if you look outside and you see a rainbow, right, you just have this feeling of awe, like this is an amazing event to be able to see. And you can actually break down that into why we see those colors and why they're spread out like that.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Andrew Smith, who is a material chemist, earned his undergraduate degree at UW-Stout, calls himself a color enthusiast. You can join in. How do you interact with color in your life? How big of a role does color play? What kinds of colors excite you? How much does a car's color influence whether you want to buy it? 800-642-1234. Taryn is joining us from Toma. Hi, Taryn. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. So this reminds me of this one fact my biology professor from college told us. She said that besides rods and cones in our eyes, ducks also have this kind of pentagonal prism in their eyes, and that may suggest that they see different colors that we don't see. Is there any info you have on this or any updated studies there have been recently?
Taryn, thank you for that. Andrew, your insights there on what the human eye can see in terms of color and what ducks see.
Yeah, so ducks, you know, in particular, I'm not familiar necessarily with their visual perception or the biology behind it, but you're absolutely right. Animals and humans have different biology that allows us to see different parts of the electromagnetic spectrum. So the electromagnetic spectrum is basically energy, wave energy, and the visible spectrum is this really narrow band of that between about 400 nanometers and 800 nanometers. So our biology allows us to see in that range, and we associate different wavelengths with different colors, and we, you know, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and violet. So animals have a little bit different biology, and they actually can see either certain parts of that visible band or even beyond that into the ultraviolet or even the near infrared bands. So for example, you mentioned ducks. Birds, it can see very well into the UV, some birds, and they can also see some visible light. Cats, they can see primarily greens and violets, different shades therein. And dogs can see yellows and blues and violets. And beyond that, it's more or less grayscales.
Let's go to Rana now in Cameron. Rana, hi.
Hi, good morning. I think Taryn perhaps was a great segue into my question or statement, I guess. So understanding that we're all animals, even ducks and humans. So in humans then, our rods and cones, I mean in animals, are what define our color for us. And it must be then that the differences in individual people in the rods and cones in our eyes are what we call determine the color. For example, I'll look at something and I'll say that's red. And in my mind, it's truly red. My husband will say, well, no, it's purple or it's burgundy. And that's his visual perception of that color. So is it just the difference between our rods and cones are, or how do I explain that? Thank you.
Rana, thank you. Andrew.
Yeah, so that's a really, really good point. And it probably brings up this, that social experiment of, you know, do women see color different than men for that matter? And if you look at the biology of men and women's eyes, there actually is a difference in the number of cones and rods between each of us. So, you know, some people will see exactly that. We could be looking, Kate, for example, at the exact same object, standing right next to each other in the same amount of light. And for instance, a flower would appear maybe Ferrari red to me, but it might appear crimson to you. And part of that interpretation of color is based on the biology, but also our learned associations, right? Our environment and the way that we've been raised also impacts how we perceive things and maybe how we associate certain colors with certain objects.
So a dozen years ago, you co-create this electric blue pigment named Yinmin. Can you tell us the story behind the color's discovery?
Yeah, the Yinmin discovery was really what we like to call serendipity. We were working on materials. These are complex inorganic materials, trying to develop what's called a multiferrolic. And these materials are used in memory storage on the read-write devices and such. So think of a magnetic hard drive in your computer. In order to store information, you have to have this magnetic response to an electric field or vice versa. So we were studying these materials. And my advisor at the time, Dr. Moss Subramanian, guided me in a project to work on these materials based off of yttrium manganese oxide, which has some of these properties, and we wanted to enhance that. So we made a couple compositions. I did some analytical calculations. We studied it and tried to figure out if it was going to be a good multiferroic. And Serendipitously, it was blue because it was a terrible multi-furrowic. but it was recognizing that, you know, this material typically would be black if it's a good multi-furrowic. And it clearly wasn't. It had some vibrant blue to it. And so that immediately sparked this response with my advisor and I of, well, why? That's unusual. Let's understand that more. And so we made a few more compositions, and then we saw this blue intensity kind of have this really broad spectrum. And as we learned more about it, we learned that we could actually tune the blue color. And from that led to, you know, some additional studies as use for potential industrial applications for pigments.
Industrial application. How about the kids' coloring box, the crayons, the Crayolas?
Yeah, it's so exciting. My children were pretty excited. We actually visited Crayola facility and got to make some crayons that had the blue wrapping around it called Blutiful. It was a fantastic experience. But so as we look to commercialize the material as a pigment, Crayola reached out and had interest in that and using it to color a new crayon. And at the time we were going through, this was at my time at Shepherd Color Company, we were going through getting all of the EPA approvals and all of the regulatory certifications on it so that it could be used appropriately in various applications. So at the time they actually didn't have an FDA approval or an approval for use in the application of crayons. So Crayola made it and inspired by yttrium indium manganese blue.
You did mention black pigment and Vanta black, with an ultra high absorption rate in the visible light spectrum. That's kind of come up as well. What interests you about Vanta black?
Vanta black is really unique for a couple of different reasons. On the artist side, there's a little debate going on about its use and exclusion of its use and for some people, but Vanta black is a part of a class of super black pigments. It's used to create some of the blackest or highest absorbing coatings out on the market. So to put this in context, most pigments used for coatings and plastics to get a black shade is like carbon black, for instance. And that absorbs about 94% to 96% of the light that impacts it. Vanta black absorbs about 99%, 99.5% even in some of its forms. So having that type of a black can really change what an object looks like. And the Vanta, V-A-N-T-A, for instance, is actually an acronym for vertically aligned carbon. And so what they're doing is these are nanotubes. So they're using a process called chemical vapor deposition to control how these nanotubes grow.
Wow.
And in which they grow traps light, which means that it absorbs it and it looks even more black.
So deep into the colorful weeds. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it, Kate.
Andrew Smith, a color creator, material scientist, worked for 6 years with Shepherd Color Company to create pigments. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.